Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, Van Dyke!
Hey, Van Dyke!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get big, big!
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Thursday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. It is Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore Thursday. It's like Billy Madison and Nudie Magazine Day. Not really. It's not nice or appropriate. But you get that level of excitement when Blackshirt Jay's in studio. Bird, how the hell are you?
I'm not too bad. You need
a caffeine IV.
Yeah,
Don't lie to me.
I do. Yes, between having a newborn at home and some work craziness going on, yeah, I am I'm struggling right now. But you know what? Pick it up. We'll get rocking and rolling. I get my A game rolling.
You're good.
We can bring it. We talk hoops. We can talk football. Whatever you guys want to talk about.
We're doing
we'll
both. We are absolutely.
T.O. turned 80 today. Let's, you know,
he
there's
did.
All sorts of things to talk about. So there's, let's rock and roll.
Can I ask that question? I don't know that I'll see 80. My lungs will say hell no. So I won't see 80. But if you guys see 80, do you want a cake that has 80 candles? Aside from the fire hazard and problematic issues with carpet, would you want a cake that has 80 candles on it?
No, I wouldn't be able to blow them out at that age.
Well, if you hit 80, I mean, you're a runner, a tennis player. You're going to be in good shape the rest of your life, TJ.
I don't
appreciate that.
I don't know. The way my body feels now in the mornings, I don't know if I want to see 80.
You know what?
I might be like a bionic man, like a couple new knees, a couple hips, you know. Some neck fusions.
Dr.
You know.
Tavis can take care of you.
Uh-huh.
I know. Here's what I'm saying. Let's see if that urban legend is true. Like the old joke that Saturday Night Live used to do with Gorbachev. They had a skit one time where Gorbachev and Reagan were celebrating each other's birthday. And when Gorbachev blew out the candles, it turned into a fireball because he was drinking vodka. Can that happen? can you have a big fireball?
Why not?
With that, I mean,
sure.
If it's on your breath, then there's 80 candles. Just make sure no one's taking. Yeah, make sure no one's taking the picture in front of you. Look that up.
Which part? I was looking. Life expectancy in the U.S. is 78 years, so
okay.
Pretty close to 80.
Oh, well.
All right, we're getting there. Life expectancy for Tim Miles with his job at Nebraska. We spent a lot of time on that. Yesterday, you know how I feel, you know how TJ feels. Some listeners and folks in the Twitter world want changes. Others are like, no, things are going well. So we'll get into that. Andy Markowski is 1 hour away. We'll talk Nebraska, Michigan State. Husker baseball getting bludgeoned right now by a team that'll should be in Omaha. Oregon State, a very good baseball team. If you missed the Pat Casey interview, that's up on HailVarsity.com. In about 15 minutes, Mike Babcock going to be with us. So we'll talk some spring ball with Babbers. We'll talk some baseball with Babbers. And a lot to cover with that. Numbers to get in, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. We mentioned Coach Osborne, a very happy birthday wish to him. Great man, great leader, amazing coach, and is a Nebraskan who cares about the state of Nebraska and the youth of Nebraska with teammates mentoring. So Coach Osborne is 80 today, and he spent time talking with the AP, and it is so weird to think about that it's been 20 years. I mean, I blink, and where's 20 years gone? What was going on 20 years ago? Well, the Schmidt family went down to the Orange Bowl to see one last Coach Osborne Nebraska football game, one last national championship run under him. And it's been 20 years. You remember seeing him as athletic director and turning the ship around. And it's a fair question with how long do you think he could have gone? Now, the story goes, and Babcock can reiterate this, but he had promised the job to Frank Solich, who agreed to stay on. Frank Solich had opportunities to go coach for Barry Alvarez. Coach Solich had a chance to go take the head coaching job at Minnesota because he'd been a loyal assistant for years. So Coach Osborne handed the job off like Devaney handed the job off to him, and Coach Solich did a good job, and you know, you had an AD make a move. So what you have is how long do you think Osborne could have gone?
How old was he when he retired?
He was 60.
Oh, wow.
He was 60, and that was kind of rule. It's kind of rule of thumb as you get out at 60.
Yeah, 60, but how many heart, you know, surgeries did he have at the time?
I don't know. I think he was in pretty good shape.
Right, though, he was, but he had some bypass procedures.
There were some health concerns.
I mean, how old is Snyder?
77, and Bobby Bowden got out at 80.
Well, let's be honest. Bobby Bowden was just driving around in his golf cart, you know,
right,
chilling. I mean, he wasn't doing much coaching at the time.
But I don't see Osborne was never kind of the figurehead. He was always the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he was very, very involved. He probably could have done five more years.
Easy.
65, easy.
Well, I'm saying 70.
Because Riley is
61, 62. Yeah. Saban's 65.
Yeah. Yeah, he could have went five more at least. I mean, it'd been nice. I mean, I would have loved to play for the guy.
Was that when they kind of got in there on you? So this would have been 01. So this would have been 3 years after Osborne retired. Yeah. So it wasn't even a.
Yeah, I mean, I was in eighth grade in 97. Uh-huh. So when he retired.
So, right.
So, I mean, you know.
Not an issue.
You're a fan of college football or Nebraska football at the time. You know, actually thinking about getting a scholarship to Nebraska was far from it.
Yeah, eighth grade, it was.
Right, I was just starting to hit puberty at the time, so who knows what you mean. There's a lot of other things on your mind. Right, right.
Why are my feet so damn big?
Right, right.
Well, I can provide some context a little bit, being the grandson. Bob Devaney and Tom Osborne walked into my grandpa's office, Al Papik, and they said, hey, you're going to be the new athletic director until Bob Devaney retires. Once he retires, Al Papik is going to be the athletic director, and then Tom, you're going to take over once you retire from football.
So there was lineage planned out.
So they were planning to do that, but then Graham Spaniard hired Bill Byrne, and that kind of ruined everything. But my grandpa was supposed to hold that job for 3 years, and then Tom was going to take that job and have Frank be the head coach.
Okay, so it went as planned when it comes to Frank getting the job.
Mm-hmm.
It just went a little. It was an end-around reverse when it came to T.O. getting the A.D. job finally.
And that's why I think there were only one or two coaches out of the whole entire coaching staff showed up at that Bill Byrne conference. I mean, a lot of people were upset about that.
So your grandfather was supposed to be the athletic director, Al Papik. Mm-hmm. I've met your grandfather a long time ago, but awesome dude and obviously a good grandson. So that's how Bob and Tom and Grandpa wanted it. Why did you ever get an explanation from Grandpa as to why Graham Spaniard, who's also, mind you, took off for Penn State in 94, and Graham Spaniard's been linked to the Sandusky stuff as far as just the higher ups while that stuff went on. If you forgot where or who Graham Spaniard is, he took off to Penn State.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I just know that kind of back in those days, obviously the athletic director Devaney at the time and him, Osborne, they wanted to make the decision. But the administration, they kind of wanted to do their own thing. So that's when Spaniard made the move. But then Bill Byrne decided to keep my grandpa, and he started one of the first ever compliances.
So CAA. Grandpa did compliance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. After that, yep.
Okay. So, again, it comes down to the smart guys versus the jocks. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Is that completely fair?
Mm-hmm.
The academic world back in the early 90s and the athletic world when it comes to power and control.
And my grandpa would have loved that job, but he respected Bill Byrne a whole lot, and I thought Bill did a good job, too, and I think he still saw value in my grandpa, Al Papik, to keep him on staff, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, part of the reason, too, when we asked Coach Osborne how long could he have gone, not only did he make the promise to Frank, but there's also, you had to kind of get out to make sure the promise went through, because Byrne, I believe, wanted to make his own hire. Okay, Bill Byrne did a lot of things. Bill Byrne came in and you had the diamond vision, right? The big scoreboards for Tunnel Walk. Mm-hmm. Bill Byrne, thanks to Jack Pierce, had the Skybox Suites sold. I mean, Jack sold all of those, okay? So you had Nebraska football with video boards. You had Nebraska football with suites that are still there today. And if you've been in one or you know someone who's got one, they're a good time. It's sweet. It's amenities. It's the forefront of college football and fan and game experience. So you have those things. You have Bill Byrne. But this kind of goes back to what you inherit as an athletic director and also making your own name as an athletic director and wanting to put your stamp on a program. What did Bill Byrne do at Oregon? Well, I mean, when he left and came to Nebraska, because when did Devaney retire? 92?
Yeah, Byrne came here in 1992.
Okay. So Oregon football was, what, 3 years removed, or 3 years away from a Rose Bowl. But they are a far cry from what they became in the late 90s, early 2000s. But Bill Byrne came in here, and Bill Byrne wanted his own. He wanted a national search. He wanted a national search for the next head football coach. He wanted to name his own football coach. And I believe T.O.'s like, no, Frank's getting the job. That's how it's going to be. And I think that had to happen quicker. Now, they also went for another national championship because technically, wasn't it the Thomas? I mean, Charlie told us this. Tom was supposed to retire after the Orange Bowl. Or after the Fiesta Bowl, I should say.
Yeah.
In 95,
but you're going to go for the three-peat. And then, what the hell, it's 1997, so let's just go win 3 out of 4.
Right.
And Frank's just chilling.
That's interesting.
We'll talk with Babbers about this, too. Mike Babcock, you're coming up in 5 minutes.
It's just funny how, I mean, I like the lineage, Tom, that's good stuff. Those are good stories. You just feel like, man, this kind of what could have been, maybe. I don't know. I know Bill did some good things, but the things started to get kind of a little crooked, a little sideways, kind of off those tracks a little bit. You know, I mean, everyone has their own agendas anymore. Everyone wants to do their own thing.
In the world of athletic directors, you want to make your hire and you want to be the dude who made a program awesome. Or sustained, or you want to get some credit for it. I mean, Bill Byrne was AD during national championships.
Right. No, he was.
But he came into a hell of a situation.
No, I know.
But
I'm a big fan of his. Ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah,
you know.
Right. But that's a different mindset, in my opinion, than what a lot of athletic directors have and are.
Well, yeah, it's big-time egos.
Right, and you got to have that for that position.
No, I know for sure.
And this kind of recently happened up in Wisconsin. The former basketball coach, Bo Ryan, he wanted his guy, Greg Gard, but Alvarez, he wanted to hire his own guy. But Ryan ended up kind of getting Greg Gard hired, but I remember Alvarez didn't want to necessarily hire him right away.
Well, and again, it comes down to territory and who's the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Alvarez is the godfather of ADs, and Barry Alvarez is going to make the call. And you ask Barry, search firms come to him. That's something that he should be proud about.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it comes down to ego, and this is my territory, and this is how it's going to be. And to be fair, it's both ways. I mean, Bob Devaney knew how to pick coaches. He knew.
Right.
I mean, he hired Danny Nee. He handed it off to T.O. And it was good. Now, with Bill Byrne, I mean, you had the whole Van Horn hiring. You thought Barry Collier was the next great after what he did at Butler.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
would he have done John Cook, or was that just kind of given to Cook since he was the assistant? I'm not for sure. I'm just.
We'll have to ask Babbers on that
one. Well, Coach Cook, he came from Wisconsin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So. I mean, another good volleyball program, obviously. But it's just, you know, it's hard to, like, put yourself in that situation. If I'm an AD, though, I'm a big fan. My whole theory is work smarter, not harder. You know, be efficient.
Sure.
You know, I get you want your guys in here so you can maybe do that. But sometimes you get your that machine is rocking and rolling, you know, and running all cylinders, and you're not missing a beat.
Stay out of the way.
It's like, you know what? Yeah.
Stay out of the way and watch the money come in.
Yes, I'm going to step back. I'm going to say my thank yous and hellos and how you doing, and then you go do your thing.
Here's the thing that I honestly think. I look at the 1999 team that was recruited by Osborne's staff, so Frank gets some credit, obviously, for the talent he brought in. And you had Charlie there, and you had a really good team, and you had a team that just lost once to Texas. But you had a team that finished number two in 1999. You were preseason number one in 2000. You ended up eighth. You had a tough loss at Oklahoma. You had a loss at Kansas State. 2001, you play for the championship. Okay? And even 2002 and 2003, I think you were... You guys had some tough breaks in 2002. You played hard. I mean, you guys were in a lot of games. You lost some of those games that usually you didn't lose, but you were. You also had some nail biters against teams that were really elite that year.
Texas.
Yeah, I mean the Texas game, the A&M comeback. Mm-hmm. K-State was on a whole different freaking level.
Yeah, they're damn good
for a couple years there. So no, I just wonder. Say Osborne goes to 2005.
8 years.
8 years. So 68 when he retires. How big's the drop-off? You have the Big 12 and the Texas issues. Mm-hmm. Mike Babcock's coming up on Hail Varsity.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you on a Thursday. We are bracing for Snowmageddon, apparently. I'm going to move to either McCook or Beatrice this weekend.
I think it's worse out in McCook.
No.
Because it's a little further enough south?
Yeah, I think it misses the cutoff line. I'm going to load up Babcock, and we're going to play some Grateful Dead, and we're going to road trip to Grandma and Grandpa's and stay out of this snow. Mike Babcock with us on Hail Varsity at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. I got my snow shovel set out right beside the door there, so if you can get over here, there's a couple of them.
Oh, okay, there's two. I get to help. All right. Well, you have an update on Husker baseball? Is it still 10-1?
Yeah, the last I heard it was 10-1. Not what I expected, although, you know, Oregon State's really good. There's no question about that, but... I thought this would be a little more competitive in this game.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, Waldron got in some trouble. Oregon State's offense has been tremendous. It's been some shakiness defensively for Nebraska. So you just kind of put this one in your back pocket, I guess, and try and move on to Utah. And then you got Myers on the hill against Oregon State Saturday. So that's maybe where I look forward to. I know the Coach Erstad will be extremely vocal and teaching. Use this as a teaching moment, I'm sure, once this thing wraps up.
Yeah, well, they've put together a really competitive schedule. I mean, Utah made the NCAA tournament last year. Oregon State probably should have.
Yeah.
But we, you know, number eight now, and we know how good Oregon State's program has been. And then next week in Frisco, Texas, it's Oklahoma State, Arizona, Arkansas. So you're getting... You're diving right into it to start the season, but you probably got to do a little better than what they're doing today.
Mike Babcock is with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, it's Coach Osborne's 80th today, and we were spending time in this first segment. Where's 20 years gone? And since his last coaching win over Tennessee in that national championship game, and of course we know what he did as an athletic director, but how long do you think Coach could have gone? Now we know the Solich backdrop, we know the Congress run, we know that he wanted to do other things. There were some health considerations, family considerations. There's reasons he left, but if you just kind of separate those and just talk about his ability, how long do you think he could have gone?
Well, I think he could have gone. you know, I don't know. He'd probably still be coaching that.
Okay.
I mean, I think he could have gone certainly much longer than he did, and I think that the fact that he stepped aside is a reflection of his character. I mean, he had made a commitment to Frank. There was concern on his part, I think, that if he didn't step aside when he did, the staff wouldn't be held intact, mm-hmm. which is something that was really important to him. And, you know, I remember the day that he made the announcement, and he said something to the effect, you know, nothing's going to change. I'm just not going to be the head coach. Well, you know, obviously that's you're going to understand the irony of that. But, you know, and he had made a commitment to family, and there were some health considerations. But you know, the health considerations, I mean, running for Congress, all the things that he's done since then require the same sort of determination, I think, that he took to coaching and so forth. And so I think he could have continued to coach. And I think, you know, in some ways, he looked back and maybe he wished he had, but he had made those commitments, and he's a man of his word. That's the thing, you know.
Well, and just two guys that he's close with, Bobby Bowden and Coach Bill Snyder. Bill's, you know, bless his heart. Hopefully things are okay in the future with his throat cancer, and he comes through everything okay, obviously. But, I mean, Coach Snyder's still going at 77 and went back for a second stint to kind of go save the K-State program after the Ron Prince experiment. And then Bobby went till he was 80. You think Tom looked at that and said, man, good for those guys?
Well, yeah, and I think those are those two good examples of you know what we're talking about here is that they did it, and I think Tom could have done it as well. I mean, I just I felt that at the time, but again, the context and what he said he would do. I remember he told me, you know, the first game that he wasn't coach, he remembered reading what Bo Schembechler wrote a book, and Bo Schembechler said the first time he wasn't coaching a game, he basically went into a room with a TV set and locked the door, or, you know, shut the door, kept everybody else out, and he watched the game on TV, and it was difficult for him. And Tom said that that's kind of the way it was for him that first game away. It wasn't out of his blood, and it wasn't out of his ability to do it. But again, and those are two good examples of coaches that have done that, and I feel the same way as you about both those guys. I had I had an experience with Coach Snyder, did a profile for a college football annual mm-hmm. Back in the day, and Coach Snyder invited me I invited myself, but I said I'd do it only if I could actually talk to him. And so I went down there, and he gave me an hour and a half of his time. He was the most cordial guy. And again, you're right. He came back and got that Kansas State program back on track. And I think Osmer looked at that and felt the same way.
Mike Babcock with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Babbers, what's your take on Tim Miles? And Sean Eichhorst had his comments on Sports Nightly last night that they're on the same page. A lot of praise was given, but the, hey, he's back next year wasn't uttered. What's your take on this situation with Coach Miles? TJ and I spent a lot of time yesterday saying that, man, he's got so much talent. They're getting better. And don't do anything stupid to ruin momentum. That's kind of our takeaway. What do you think of the job Tim's done this year?
Well, I think he's done a good job, but to your point, I think that's right, that there are young guys in the system now that are going to develop and that are getting better, and that's one of the things that you want to have. You know, you've got Glenn Watson Jr., you've got Ed Morrow Jr., you've got Michael Jacobson, you've got Jordy Chimonga. You've got guys that are going to develop, Isaiah Roby, mm-hmm. Jariah Horn. These are young guys in the system. They're going to get better, and I think that's what you want. And they've had some injury issues. They've had some tough losses. They've had a couple of nice wins there. I think he's doing a good job. And maybe I don't pay close enough attention, but it seemed like all of a sudden, here's this discussion now. Well, is his job, is he going to be back? I might have felt that way after Gardner Webb.
Right.
You know, I might have thought, gee, many Christmas, you know, where's this thing going?
Right,
but,
right.
You know, at this point, and I know they went through that stretch where they, you know, they lost three in a row, and they, you know, but no, I think it's going in a positive direction. And the other thing that you have to consider is, what's the context here? The best time in Nebraska basketball was that stretch where Danny Nee got teamed to the NCAA tournament 4 years in a row. And, you know, everybody at that point complained that, they can't win it in the NCAA tournament. Well, they corrected that by getting rid of Danny, and they don't get to the NCAA tournament. So
it's not a worry anymore.
Yeah, it's not a problem. And I know it was not the most it was fairly acrimonious, you know, when Danny was removed. But
I love the guy.
Yeah, I did too. I always felt like there was a little bit of an edge there that people looked at a guy from Brooklyn and thought he wasn't a good fit in Nebraska. But you can't deny the fact that he brought in some pretty good players here. And when Jimmy Williams was an assistant coach, Jimmy did a great job of recruiting. But what I'm talking about is the context, and it's a little bit like it's probably a little bit like Kansas fans getting upset because the football team, you know, basketball is so dominant at Kansas that you have to kind of change your how you evaluate things with the football team, I think, because of the specter within the university of the success of basketball's at. And I think it's the same way in reverse here in Nebraska. You know, it's Nebraska has a great football tradition, which is trying to get back to.
Mm-hmm.
But basketball, it's just not there consistently. So I think you got to cut a guy some slack when he's trying to build a program. And part of that building is to get young players in here, good players, and develop them and give them an opportunity.
Babbers, I have about 90 seconds left. Let's talk O-line and spring football. 22 guys on the O-line. And are you confident that there's going to be headway made by Coach Cav and company?
Yeah, I think there is. And now, I'm gonna say something that's probably a little bit extreme and probably shows my, total ignorance of the situation. But I think it's not inconceivable that you could have three redshirt freshmen in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
You've got John Reardon at center, Bo Wilson at guard, and Matt Farniok at tackle. And that could be one side of the line. I think those guys are that good. Now, how quickly can they develop? I don't know, but I think they're – and then you've got Farmer coming back,
mm-hmm.
and you've got Foster, and you've got Gates. And I think, Decker got a little bit of an opportunity there. I think that there are guys that can get the job done, but there's some youth there, obviously. I mean, when you're talking about veteran guys are Gates and Foster and Farmer, mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of, experience, except for the fact that Gates obviously 2 year starter. So, but they're young guys.
Young guys. We'll see how they develop. Spring ball around the corner. Can read more with Mike Babcock, HailVarsity.com and magazine at MDBabs on Twitter. Babbers, we'll talk next week. Avoid that snow.
Hey, yeah, like I said, two shovels. I got them right out there.
I'll be over. Mike
okay.
Babcock, Babbers, take care.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
That's some awesome parenting during the commercial break.
Always get some side action with a
junior.
With a 11-year-old?
He's 10.
10.
If his room isn't clean, he'll be 10 and out. So long and short of it is we can maybe have someone buy the home tonight, which is cool. The bad news is we are the biggest slobs in Lincoln and perhaps the state of Nebraska. So our 10-year-old is, it's up to him to clean the house or the kitchen he helped destroy. So FaceTiming him during the commercial break, making sure everything's picked up, make sure the dog's not going to maul anybody. And Jay, that was pretty nice of you. I mean, it was really observant to see that Carson's wearing that ugly Michigan State crap again. It's Sparty, Nebraska tonight, and there's a side bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I asked him what kind of action he wanted. He offered $15. I said, let's go.
Okay.
$15 you know, bucks, he's, is easy enough.
He's going to shake that, but we're going to amend this since...
I should have said $15, and you got to start wearing Nebraska stuff because, you know...
Well,
he wears way too much Michigan State stuff.
Listen, Grandma and both grandparents have been conned into the Spartan world. I have bought him a plethora of Nebraska crap, okay?
You know, I totally believe
it. So here's what's going to happen. You're getting 9.5 points tonight. Executive rule.
Yeah, right, right.
Right? It's only fair. What is the line tonight?
It was 4.
Okay, so you're getting 9.
Nebraska, yeah.
So it's all good.
It was 4. I remember seeing yesterday 6.5.
So yeah, I checked this afternoon on. Well, I looked on ESPN and it had a minus 4. Usually they're right around a half a point.
Sure.
So
we'll get into some spring football thoughts. Some O line. Andy Markowski's 20 minutes away. John's been hanging on the line. John, go ahead. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm not giving an opinion right now. I'm just stating some facts. The most important thing people have is the shake of their hand or their word. And I came out in favor of Tim Miles getting a rollover of his contract last year and this year. How can you say those things about Miles and not give him a rollover in his contract immediately to help with recruiting to 5 years? And then what troubles us is he says one thing, like I'm going to talk about about our coaches at the end of the season. And when he brought Riley in and things turned south, he didn't apologize to us and say, well, I'm going to come up and not honor what I said.
You're talking about Eichhorst?
Yeah, Eichhorst with Riley. What we're looking for is just some honest, straightforward comments from him. And what he says is like, in the Batman character, Two-Face. It's not reliable. If you support a basketball coach, then you should have given him a rollover for 2 years to help him with recruiting and the players on the team. And after this comment the other night, then he should immediately do that and not hold off in case he loses the last bunch of games. Just be honest and forthright with the Husker Nation. I mean, that's all I'm asking. My opinion differs a lot, but I'm just concerned about the integrity of our athletic department.
John, thanks for the phone call. I'll say this, okay? Now, it is different that policy in the past has not been to comment during the season, except when it's DEFCON 2, and it's 3-6, and you lose to Purdue, and you remember that week as a Nebraska fan. How many torches were lit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right?
Oh, for sure.
A lot of fires.
So I'm okay with breaking policy to say all is well, stay calm, don't freak out. Don't raid the Food King. Animal House reference, TJ. Please see it this weekend.
Can't guarantee anything.
They're robbing the Food King. Listen, and then what he said last night is all in support of Tim, except that he will be back. Look, here's what's going to happen. He's going to look at this year, and he'll probably give him that 4-year, for sure, 5-year window. Ask yourself this. A year ago during the summer, based on how things had gone, how would you react if you would have got the automatic extension? I know it's kind of pricey doing business. It's normal. But did you think Nebraska basketball had earned it a year ago in the summertime to just automatically chalk it up?
I just felt like that would have been the norm and not much hubbubaloo would have been made about it. Well, I think because there was a lot of noise because they didn't.
No, there was more noise because they didn't, and it was used against them. More damage was done by not doing it than doing it. But listen, how many times, just as an example, okay, people go back in history and I know Petey's kind of not a favorite, but people still kill Peterson for extending Callahan. For I mean, people for doing what's normal but, in college football. People still pick and choose and kill guys for extending him.
Right,
you can, right before you blow somebody out.
I mean, you can always say
a guy plan on firing a guy.
No, but you always say there's an extension. I mean, look at Jeff Fisher, for instance, with the Rams this past year.
He just got an extension.
But they canned him. Yeah. But, I mean, that's just an extension. It could say a vote of confidence or whatever it is. You could say you're extending him. But who knows what was done already where you could just say, like,
you're more two-faced by coming out and saying,
different things were hit.
This guy is doing great. I support him. And then you cap him. At the end of the year, that's way worse looking, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as
I agree,
as long as Miles and I, of course, know what the hell's going on, they'll fill us in due time.
Right? I don't see. I've never been one.
I don't even think his job's in danger.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I think it's.
I hate to go back to yesterday, but
it's
prefabricated,
creating some talk, you know. Not really much going on right now. They've got some hoops talk, and they're not that hot of a team. So let's try to create some sort of buzz. But yeah, I mean, I hate the fact that
it's
you're
been
doing
swirling a bit, a little bit.
Right? Okay. I can you can sell me on that. But you know, I just kind of lost my train of thought all of a sudden.
No, it's out there, but who's it from? Where are you hearing it from? Is it media or is it brass?
Whoops, sorry. The extension.
Yeah.
And don't fire a guy. You know, it's the committing to it. But again, I don't need to hear like a vote of confidence. I don't really care. I mean, I-Course could be saying one thing, but as long as Miles and I-Course are on the same page and they know what's going on, and one's not stabbing each other in the back about some deals, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, who knows? I mean, I-Course could tell you one thing, and it could be completely opposite. Who knows? I mean, I don't put a whole lot of weight. I mean. You saw what he did with Bo. You saw what he's doing. He's changed his stance on things a little bit with Coach Riley, obviously, because it's his guy.
Mm-hmm.
Miles is not his guy, you know. But he's given some vote of confidence. I don't know. I don't put weight into what an AD says. I mean, he could just be saying whatever
it's more
he wants.
Actions, right?
I mean, it's never whatever could be said in public. I guarantee you, it's not perfectly scripted like it goes in those meetings they meet. It's just, you know, it's he's taking care of the media, he's taking care of the fan base, that he has that job to do. But he meets one-on-one with Coach Miles or whoever it may be, it's far from, you know, similarities of what he's telling the media and what he's telling to the fan base and to the public.
We get into spring football, the offensive line. I promise you we'll do that here in about 30 minutes. But just some thoughts. Can dial us up 466-377-6800-825-5865. That on the way. Andy Markowski is 15 minutes away. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Former black shirt, Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Winding down hour one, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. If you're out for a good time with friends or family, and you have a couple, and someone offers you a ride home, and you say no thanks because you think you're okay to drive, a reminder, mixing alcohol and driving, never a good thing for anyone. You can take a life, can lose yours. You can be arrested, go to jail, lose your license, pay fines, and legal fees. Any way you look at it, you drink, you drive, you lose a message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. So, some spring ball we'll get into. Andy Markowski with us in 10 minutes. We'll have a further preview with Andy in a minute. But how you feeling tonight about Nebraska-Michigan State? I think this thing will be extremely close. I think Nebraska will play much, much, much better, which isn't hard to do, than they did last time against Sparty. I just think Michigan State's straight up in danger zone.
Well, Michigan State.
They're 16-11. They're a couple of games over 500 in conference. But every time you think they're about ready to turn that corner, they don't
well,
do
they
anything. Probably,
they might have played their best game of the year when they played us.
They were unreal. Let's say years. It's the best game they played in years against Nebraska.
They looked phenomenal when they played us. They couldn't miss. Played good defense, the ball movement. It was a hell of a basketball game by Sparty and company a few weeks ago.
I like Bridges. I think Harris being out's pretty big time. The fact that you got Ed changes the whole complexion of things with just your physicality. And that was, I think Nebraska fans were really that's one game this year that you're super discouraged by because you're coming off the Purdue win. And you're like, okay, they did that against Purdue, the best team in the league. And then you just get annihilated at home. They killed you. They beat the hell out of you, and they shot everything, and it went in. It was a nightmare. Mm-hmm.
That was like payback for beating Michigan State three times in a row. Like it was going to eventually swing the other way.
They picked their spot, and it was all on them. Now, a couple of thoughts I have is look, I don't think Roby's – I said he'll go last Saturday. I was stupid with that call. Well, I think they'll be better with Ed as he kind of continues to find his role. I think Ty's probably getting a second wind. I think Glenn's – here's the thing. How dinged and how banged up was Glenn the first time they played Sparty? His groin was giving him all sorts of issues. So he wasn't even himself. You got a different Glenn Watson, which will be huge. Sparty tends to stick with man defense. Nebraska's beat them at their own game, finding matchups and finding plays and finding pick and rolls and pick and pops historically to get things going. I think Nebraska can be right there. I think Michigan State needs this one too bad, and it's on the road. I think it'll be, you said 4 points is the number. It'll be right around there. That's what I see. We'll ask Andy Markowski about it, though, in a little bit. I just think there's too much Sparty tonight, too tough a road game.
Not far off. I mean, usually Nebraska has a nice, surprising win, and you should get your hopes up. They stab you right in the back.
But then they follow up that backstabbing with a nice surprise.
Exactly. So they'll probably lose, and then they'll probably win the next one, and they'll probably lose, and they'll probably
If they beat Sparty and Goldie, that'd be pretty nice. Mm-hmm. That'd be good. Hour two coming up. Andy Markowski on the way with Hail Varsity Radio.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, Van Day!
Hey, Van Day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get beat, beat!
We get beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmitz and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Into Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmitz, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore. TJ Henning, producing, engineering, and contributing. Thanks to Mike Babcock in Hour 1. Hour 2, we get started off with former Husker standout, the pride of Ord, Andy Markowski with this. Andy, great to have you back on. How are you?
Doing great, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for your time. And before we dive into Sparty tonight in Nebraska on the road for an important game for both teams, what's kind of been your reaction to, well, the climate right now? Not the fact that we're supposed to get 400 feet of snow in the state tomorrow, but just the Tim Miles cloud of job security, or do you believe that? Let me start there. Do you believe that his job is in danger or was in jeopardy?
Well, you know, I'm not on the other side of it. Right. In my opinion, you know, it shouldn't be. You know, when you hired Tim Miles, you didn't hire a guy that was going to come in and bring two top 10 recruits with him and flip the program overnight. You brought a program builder. You know, if you look at the first 2 years, which I think they struggled, they missed on a lot of recruiting. I think Tim has kind of settled into what he needs, what type of player he needs to be successful in the Big Ten. And I think the last three recruiting classes have proved that. You look at the sophomores, you look at the freshmen that are contributing, and then you look at the success that, you know, the kid out of Illinois is having as a senior, and then you add Copeland into that class. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by that definition, you know, he's added the pieces that I think you need to at least be in the middle of the pack in the Big Ten. I still think they're need, you know, a difference maker away from competing for the top two or three in the league or conference championship. Now, certainly from a one-loss record standpoint, you know, this team has been disappointing, but, you know, I think you can go back and start to point to the reasons why, whether it be a tough schedule and or injuries. So, you know, in my opinion, it's sad that the administration has allowed it to be speculatory, where schools have been able to use that against us in recruiting, and for it to come to a head in really what was a great week of Husker basketball, a great win against the rebuilding Penn State team, and then to go on the road and win an exciting Ohio State game. I felt it's taken away from some of the momentum that they've built, but I think the administration can take responsibility by not addressing it and not extending him to a fourth year, which every, by the most part, 99% of college coaches carry 4 years on their contract.
Andy Markowski is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. That's kind of been lost in this is, yeah, you're on a two-game win streak. You have a chance to make it three at Michigan State. How do you see this cloud as ammo tonight for Nebraska as they go on the road, or do you see it as a distraction?
No, I don't know. Every, you know, that's so removed.
Does it matter?
A lot of kids. I mean, you know, I always laugh at my father. He's like, oh, they came out of the locker room. They look fired up. Like, it's all about the preparation and the mental state of your group. I think 18 to 22-year-olds are pretty immune to the stuff that goes on to the outside of success, and everybody pat them on the back how great they are. That tends to catch up to them, but you know, but the article and that speculation, you know, I don't know if that has an impact where it's distracting and or gives them extra motivation. I do think Michigan State's a team that we can beat. You know, they're, you know, very young. Certainly they've experienced the injury bug a little bit this year. So, you never know, but certainly, you know, coming off of two games here where we've played pretty well, I like our chances to go in and be competitive tonight.
Andy Markowski, a few minutes with us here, Hail Varsity Radio. Andy, some matchup thoughts for tonight. Let's get to the game. And Ed's been big whenever he's been part of the lineup and seen minutes. Miles and Sparty were phenomenal when they were here following the Purdue game. So it's two different teams. No Aaron Harris. You have Ed Morrow in the lineup for Nebraska. Where do you think Nebraska can go to work tonight?
Well, I like our ability to be physical with Ed in the lineup, and this is not a typical Izzo team. You know, they don't shoot it well from the three. They don't have a high offensive efficiency in terms of execution of their set plays. They don't have the depth where, you know, I think that's hurt their half-court defense as well as their rebounding. So I do think we have an advantage inside, which is rare against a Tom Izzo coach team. You know, normally you're trying to stay competitive on the backboard against his teams. If you can do that, you can be competitive. I think we can outperform them in the lane tonight. And then Glenn Watson is going to have to continue the streak that he's on. I mean, you know, Ty has proven he can be consistent in terms of being one of the few guys in the country that has been at double figures in every game. You know, as long as Glenn comes with the level he's played at, you know, like I said, it's going to be a physical game. It feels like a Michigan State day, right, with the weather. You know, they're under the gun. They've had injuries. You know, everybody's expecting Izzo to kind of right the ship, right? That's what he does this time of year. So, you know, he's pressing hard to get them to perform. But, you know, I think they're limited. I don't like our matchup on Bridges. You know, he's too big for Taylor. He's too athletic for Jacobson. You know, we're going to have to make sure we do a good job on him without having a great one-on-one matchup. And I'm sure that's been the base of their game plan going in is, you know, how do you not let him get, you know, 20 to 25 points where he single-handedly can beat you?
He is such a difference maker. I got a kick out of Coach Miles saying that'd be really cool if he declared for the NBA today, you know, if he went that direction. With Sparty, and let's kind of broaden out here with the Big Ten, Maryland's kind of hit a wall. Wisconsin jump-started themselves back by beating Maryland last weekend. I don't know what the heck's up with Northwestern. They look good against everybody except Illinois. Michigan, I think no one really wants to mess with because they're that good of shooters. I mean, they're not awesome, but they are good at that. Kind of handicap the Big Ten for me right now as you see it, kind of an Eddie Markowski crop report here 2 weeks out from conference tournament time, a couple, you know, 10 days out from March or so, a little less than. How do you see the Big Ten right now? Still seven bids, or is that slipped?
No, I think, you know, certainly there's a lot of basketball to play. I look at, you know, Michigan and Michigan State is kind of that 6-7 range now, which, you know, I think both have a chance to improve their seed. I see it two ways. The Big Ten is relatively young this year. If you look at the struggles that a few teams have had, I think it's due to youth. Wisconsin and Purdue are two of the older teams, and I think that's the reason why they're top of the league. If you ask me to say which team's going to do the best in a tournament, I would take Purdue.
Yep.
But I could see Wisconsin just being upperclassmen holding this thing together, you know, for a chance to win the Big Ten title. I don't think they're great, but I think they've, you know, had enough success, and there's enough upperclassmen there. They've won a lot of close games, and you know, in league play, sometimes that's the difference is just how many, you know, close games do you win. And then look at another team like Michigan. I think they're the third most experienced team in the league. If, you know, as Purdue and Wisconsin are both experienced, I think Michigan's going to make a late run. They're playing better. They've got a lot of upperclassmen, and that bodes well to a strong finish. Whereas teams like Maryland that are playing a lot of freshmen, the season gets long. You know, I know they say these kids are no longer freshmen, you know, by this time of the year, but they are physically, and certainly they start hitting the wall mentally in terms of the preparation it takes as game intensity increases. You know, the value and the importance of games go up. Sometimes young kids, you know, fail to prepare like they need to be successful in conference tournaments and NCAA tournament type formats.
Andy, now we're getting, you know, we're just a few weeks away from March Madness, obviously. Conference tournaments are coming up, and you've always mentioned teams that can make it deep within any of those tournaments. They have to have great guard play. Now, I got the football background. You got the basketball background. I've always never asked you why that is. Why do with teams that have that great guard play from a basketball mind are able to make it deeper into a field than the teams that are better, maybe have better big man, but the guards aren't as good.
Well, there's such a fine margin in those games, right? If you look at the difference in score in the NCAA tournament, you know, and those come down to late game plays, right? And then the ball is in guards' hands. And that's why, you know, great point guards, teams that handle the ball, that value the basketball, that don't turn over, that can hit a key shot, always have a chance to be more successful in the postseason. You know, not saying that, you know, I think having depth in the front court is important because foul trouble attrition matters. But if your best player is a post player, the chances are teams are good enough to take him away or you know, limit them in a tournament format where guards have the ball in their hands more. They can create not only for themselves, for teammates. So, you know, I think, you know, as I've always said, I think it's guard play, it's assist to turnover ratio, big shots. And then from there, it's do you have the depth to hold up, you know, in a course of a foul trouble type game where, you know, if you only have one post player, that could really affect you. So teams like, you know, Carolina have always had that recipe, good guard play, and then they've always been depth along the front line, and that's why they're a hard out in the tournament.
Andy Markowski is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Andy, take me through what that NIT run did for you guys, such a young team, a mixture, I should say. You had seniors with Strick and Boone and Badgett and guys that went to the NCAA tournaments as sophomores and juniors. As seniors, they won the NIT. But your class, as freshmen and sophomores, you won the NIT, and then you made a tournament run as juniors. What did that experience in New York do for you? And if Nebraska can put a run together, what can it do for this team?
Yeah, I think the biggest impact it makes is how you feel about yourself when the season gets done, right? The next, you know, if you look at April and May, those are great development months for basketball. They'll go back into skill work. You know, when you've had a miserable season or you've had a poor finish to the season, you know, that affects your mood. It affects your, you know, desire and want to get better. You know, so finishing on a good note where you have momentum, you have belief that you guys can, you know, you can come back the next season and have a good season, I think it carries over for those 2 weeks two months of spring development. I don't think you carry that momentum through the summer. You know, certainly those game experiences matter. You know, the fact that you've played in, you know, high intensity games, I think you can reach down and pull that from year over year. But I think the 2 months of energy from a strength and conditioning and a skill development standpoint, that's the impact that it can have for a player development. And all, you know, the better player development there is, that's just going to go hand in hand to better team success the following year.
Now, what player on the roster right now are you most excited to see continue to develop?
You know, there's a lot of them. I think Jordy has shown signs of the Morrow injury. As devastating as that was, losing some close games, it actually gave Jordy a chance to play and have some success. So I think there was some, a silver lining behind that injury. But, you look at a guy like Roby having a chance to be healthy. He wasn't able to lift in the offseason, due to that injury that he had. So those two players, I think, need to make great strides. And if they do, you couple that with the development that Morrow, Jacobson, and Watson have all shown from their freshman to sophomore year, there's a lot of pieces that are exciting. I still think they need to add one more playmaking guard. I don't know if Gill is that, kind of that 1-2 combo that can put the ball in their hands and make a play. But if you can add one more piece like that, I'm really optimistic. I think next year is probably the best team that has been assembled from a roster standpoint, top to bottom, and probably our NIT team, 96 that had four NBA guys. I don't know if this roster has four NBA guys, but they certainly have parts that look like they belong in a Big Ten game, and it's been a long time since we've had, several players that fit that bill.
Well, I mean, Andy, just last thought, too. I mean, it's been compared to your last tournament team where you had Vincent was Big 12 Player of the Year. You were on that squad, Lou, and then Cookie. And I don't know how long Cookie played internationally, but he played internationally, and we know T. Lou's story. But about 30 seconds on that last tournament team you were on, you were good, obviously, but what separated you from teams that just missed in years earlier?
Well, yeah, the player of the year in the league in Vincent, right? I mean, he was able to put us on the back. To be honest, if we would have had adequate point guard play, we really struggled at that position. But, Cookie was, one of the top defenders in the country for a three-year stretch. Vincent was the same. I mean, you had a couple dominant players, on the court that were all conference / player of the year. And, they always say if you have three of those guys that level, you can be in the top three in the league. And we finished fourth, right? We were right there in the conference race, but certainly had the pieces that when you show up against an Arkansas or the following year, we're 10-6 in the conference, which, hasn't been done in a long time. Every coach wants to take credit, but really it comes down to just having some pieces that are better than the next guy. And, if you're the same, trying to put those pieces in the right spot to be successful. And I think Tim finally has himself assembled, some pieces that when you show up, you're not using smoke and mirrors. You can just line up and play straight up and trust that your guys are as good as the other teams in the league.
I like that. Andy Markowski, Husker standout, pride of Ord with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Andy, love talking with you. We'll do this again real soon, and thanks for a few minutes today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
He's awesome, man. Andy Markowski. I love that. And that's, you go back to that last tournament team, a lot of talent, a lot of pieces. That was a fun team to watch. And even, there was a year Nebraska, I think that 97 team that went, okay, or was it 97-98? Yeah, the 97-98 team that went to the NCAA tournament, I think they were 17-12, 18-12, somewhere around there.
Was it the year that they were up by 15 or 20 at half against Arkansas, and then they lost.
They were up 10 the opening
big,
round of the NCAA tournament.
Arkansas, then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was an 11-6 matchup, the seeding.
Mm-hmm.
But that year, Iowa State and Tim Floyd, man, had they were ballers.
They were a 2-seed that year?
They may have been a year away from being the 2-seed.
Because that year, they were a 2-seed, and they got upset.
With Tinsley, yeah. They had a guy named Derek Willoughby that ended up being in Chicago, and Willoughby would shoot like seven shots a game, and he'd drill all of them from three. But Iowa State was fifth in the country that year in Nebraska, and he went on the road and won in Ames. Just somehow, some way.
Right.
So that was a fun team. Really good team. We'll talk spring football. Offensive linemen. Yes, we'll hit on them next.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Winding down a Thursday, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mr. Blackshirt, and NFLer Jay Moore. How about Sauter Heyman and your friends at Sauter Heyman? 1 carat diamonds. I would get out there Well, still time tonight if you head to South Point into Lincoln. Downtown Lincoln, 12th and O, or Grand Island out west. 1 carat diamonds, $100 a month. They're affordable. She'll love it, to be flat out honest with you. A 1 carat diamond is nothing to sneeze at, and it's affordable for you when you see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Limited time author with approved credit. You can log on, SauterHeyman.com, yourbestring.com. Let's talk offensive line and spring football. Spring practice will get underway a week from Saturday. Bird, when I say Husker offensive line, what word comes to mind? Be nice.
Yeah.
I know you're a defensive lineman.
Oh, man, there's a lot. Inexperience.
Okay.
I'm thinking that, you know, next year there's going to be a lot of new faces.
Mm-hmm.
Like guys that haven't had a whole lot of reps. Obviously, you know what Gates can do, even though he struggled mightily. In that Tennessee game, the bowl performance, but
let's stop there for a second. Do you hold that against him as kind of is that the lasting impression you have of him?
No, I mean, listen, I mean,
I thought he did well against Calhoun.
Yeah, well, I think Calhoun was
overhyped. Okay,
I think Calhoun was lazy. he had some effort issues, obviously. Barnett. I mean, he's
top 15.
Yeah, he's a first round pick, really really good. So I mean, that sticks out because you hear of. I mean, how many times in the past you've heard of really good, you know, first round defensive line talent, and we've gone up against them in the past, and our guys have stoned them most of the game. You know, you want to go back to the 97 Orange Bowl, and you hear everything about Leonard Little. Really didn't do much that game, you know. Okay. And again, the run game always kind of neutralizes guys a little bit.
And the way we
kind of did things, you kind of neutralize some things. But even going in the past, you know, the hype is there. But you want to measure your guys. How do they do against NFL first round talent?
Okay.
I mean, he looked. I mean, his head was spinning. He didn't. He down was up. Up was down. He didn't know which way to go. So, I mean, it was – he had a rough one. But, I mean, you look at the guys coming back still. What is Neville going to do? You know, what's his situation? Now you're just saying, you know what, he's a senior. He hasn't given us much. You know what? And is he – you know, it's one of those – you know,
he's
get off the pot type of deal.
He's
or,
a body at this point.
Oh, for sure. He's a first-round offensive tackle body. But he hasn't performed, you know, the performance is struggling. But you look across, okay, are the coaches now saying, okay, we gotta start to build here? You know, can Neville be that guy? Or do we have to start playing the guys, the Farniaks and the Raridans and all these guys who we can build now we know have 4 solid years ahead of them? Or if they do perform well, maybe they at least got 3, you know, and they could leave after their junior year if they're performing well. That's a long ways away, but it's just depending on what the mindset of the coaches are. I mean, they're very, very inexperienced. Hopefully Gates learned his lesson from Barnett. I mean, without a doubt, I think that'll make him better. I mean, he learns from it. You know, you're playing against one of the top D linemen in the country, so you get better from those type of situations. Build on it, make sure it doesn't happen again, and take that knowledge and transfer it down the line to those young guys. And teach them everything, you know, about that situation that he went through. But definitely an experience for me. And I don't know, it's just kind of, I'm always, it's just with college football, you're just kind of in wait and see. You know, you don't know until that first game. And hell, even the first game, I still wait to cast judgment because, A, the talent that you're playing against isn't a lot of times as great. Or B, I mean, it is their first game playing. So it's like sometimes these guys, it's a lot. It's a lot for them to digest. So definitely for me, inexperience is the word. And we'll learn, obviously, as it go down. But it'll be interesting this spring to see what happens.
Well, let me ask you this, too. And we heard Babers talk about it a little bit with the redshirt freshman that could challenge and play. Two things that come to my mind with the offensive line. One was just the consistency side of things where there were games last year where the O-line took over. They kind of rewrit some of the wrongs, or rewrote, so that was brutal, rewrote some of the wrongs that hurt the O-line the first year of Riley, where they didn't finish teams off, they didn't hold the football, they didn't finish drives, they didn't get first downs. They did that last year to win the Minnesota game, where you got a 10.5-minute drive. They did that to close out Indiana. I know it's Purdue and Illinois, but at least it's different than last year where you didn't close out Purdue and Illinois 2 years ago. So the offensive line made strides and took it upon themselves, injuries or not, to finish out games. Now, they couldn't run the ball at all, against Ohio State. You got down by too much, you had to chuck it. Couldn't run the ball, like 2.93 a carry, less than 3 a carry against Iowa. And he ran it for damn near 2 yards a carry against Tennessee. Two of those three teams, you can't have that. And that comes down to being physical. That comes down to not getting manhandled. And in two of those games this last year, the O-line got manhandled. Your best dude got beat up by an NFL draft pick. That'll happen. Foster was back, and I thought he did okay. I like Farmer, what he does, but your center and your right tackle, you got to find answers. And they were either hurt or ineffective, those two spots last year. You got Farniok at tackle, that's an option. I know he's a red shirt. Reardon is a mean dude at center. Give me some meanness. Give me some partners in crime, along with Gates, who you see Gates get into it with people. I think Foster's the same way. And I like what Farmer's done, but if Farmer gets rolled up on again, you got Bo Wilson, that's a tough dude. And I can spew all this right now. I haven't seen it in action, but I'll take coach's words for it. I'll take Kavanaugh's word about, you know, you got to get some tough dudes in here, and he's high on this group. If he says he's high on these redshirt freshmen, I'll take his word on it. He's coached the O-line for 1,000 years. So maybe you'll have an upgrade in toughness on the O-line. That's what I got to see and I want this fall, because it's going to be an attitude for you as a Nebraska offense where you're going to be tough, even if you are throwing the ball around 30, 40 times a game, 25, whatever, with a pro-style attack. At least you can smash mouth some people. And then in tune, you got to make the defensive line tough, too. You get both lines.
Well, it coincides.
Yeah, make both lines of scrimmage angry and hateful at each other. My big question mark is guys that have been in the program now for 2 years going on a third year. You got a guy in Decker who's got a lot of talent, smart dude. Where's his love for the game, or is he got it figured out? And I'm not questioning his love for the game, but there are usually A, B, and C choices as to why a guy that talented hasn't played yet, okay? Jalen Barnett, has he grown up? Does he know that football's a job now? As a top 100 recruit. Christian Gaylord, good body, good feet, kid out of Kansas. Those three guys, and Kavanaugh is hoping that they kind of pull it together because they've been in the program now. A lot of talent to come in here. You were brought in. You've been taught. You're not expected to be All-American year two, but step up. Push each other. Have options. You've got 22 offensive linemen on the roster right now, and the guys that have performed best for you, if you want to look at longevity, it's been Cole Conrad and your left tackle, Nick Gates. That's a fact.
Yeah, well, the scary thing is
Farmer, too.
Right,
obviously.
Right. But with some of the injury situations, but just the kind of patch job they had to do this year, I mean, who would have thought that, you know, Foster comes back and plays the last couple games of the year?
Man,
I mean,
his commitment. Well, level.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
No, that's great. But it's like, it's kind of the situation they're in. They're like, if he's back, absolutely. Hell yeah, we're going to play him. You know, maybe some other years you're like,
he's your best option,
okay.
But where's
right.
the other guys
exactly.
that have talent?
Right. So that's just kind of, that's what it's like. Normally in those situations, like, well,
makes you ask
okay.
the question,
right.
what's going on?
Right. Exactly. Like, no, we're good. Like, let's rest him. Let's do the necessary things. There's no need to rush him back. No, I get it. The whole medical thing wasn't there or wasn't available. Whatever, you know, small print there is within the NCAA guide. Lines on that, I don't read it or understand. But yeah, it's just like, who are some of these other linemen?
They were going to play Bo Wilson last year because homeboy was physically ready mm-hmm. enough. It's just, and Jay, you can speak to this, man. What I mean, I know you're on the defensive side of the ball, but you went against offensive line guys, and you probably lined up against guys where you saw the talent they had, but they were just missing the mental part. Well, and it took an extra year to get down, probably.
Well, it's just funny. I was having a conversation the other day. Get to know Logan Rath a little bit.
Yeah.
He was a D lineman.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing him.
And just talking about, you know, who's moving a lot of weight and who's strong guys in the weight room. We just got to talking. And we got to talking about guys who move a ton of weight but can't transfer that to the football field. Guys who are freakish athletes who can, you know, or just you'd think would be killer on the football field, but they can't. You know, I always had a fun saying that weights don't fight back. You know, you could be strong as hell, but you know what? They don't have to worry about anyone else. It's just weird. Some guys just get out there and they have the build, they have the strength, the athleticism, but when they get out in that field, I don't know, it's between the ears or they just don't have enough fire underneath their ass to get after it. I don't know. It's weird. They can achieve that in the weight room for some reason. That whole meathead thing kicks in for them a little bit, but for some reason when it's someone else doing it to them, they kind of, you know, step back a little bit.
I don't know.
It's just weird. So it's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, is it a technique thing? Is it a mental thing? Is it a strength thing? I think it's always a little bit of everything. But again, you don't have to be the strongest guy. If you're not the strongest guy, you're gonna have damn good technique. If you are strong, you can get away with not having the best technique. If you do have the best technique, then you're gonna be unstoppable. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think more than anything, it's just. It's mental, and guys just get a little overwhelmed with everything. I think guys, sometimes they don't perform. They're not as committed. They're not ready to undertake this load, you know, and they have a hard time kind of separating school and life
sure.
and
no,
football,
I mean,
and it's just, it becomes a lot.
Takes a lot. We'll spend more time on the O-line another day, but some initial thoughts there. Hail Varsity Radio continues.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
I got to head out for girls basketball here shortly, district action. But, you know, I know that what I need when I'm done scooping my driveway or watching my kid get done scooping the driveway, I need to find a hot tub for a little rest and relaxation, a little therapy with that movement. And with Snowmageddon coming in, I mean, you better have that hot tub top off and the bubbles going to fix that back of yours. Deb, the spa lady, Home Innovation Spas, 20th and Highway 2 in Lincoln with us. Deb, I mean, one last little bit of old man winter throwing a punch. No better way to rehab it than with relaxation, is there?
That is so right. And, you know, when it snows, I don't know how many people will tell us, I wish we had a hot tub. I wish we had one that we could go out in our own backyard, hop in when it's snowing out. And a lot of people will get their hot tub, and that is what they look most forward to, that first snow. So, yeah, it's a great time to have a spa, and we can get that in your backyard, delivered, set up. You know, we've got a lot of spas in stock, so come in and see us. We'll find the perfect one.
Well, Deb, tell me some of the options you have. I know some of the 17 models are in, and I don't know what's left of 16, but the last time we talked, I mean, there was plenty of options and plenty of ways to make it affordable, correct?
That's right. We have anything from a little small tub that you just plug into a 110 outlet, fill it up with a garden hose, and you're ready to go, up to the big swim spas that are, you know, 15 feet long, 19 feet long. We have spas of every size, shape. We have lots of therapy jets for the neck, shoulders, upper, lower back, feet. I mean, we'll find the one that's perfect for you. Just come in and let us go to work.
20th and Highway 2 in Lincoln, also a location in Omaha. SpasOnline.com can log on. But go see Deb, the spa lady. Home Innovation Spas, 20th and Highway 2. Deb, if folks want to come see you this weekend, I know 20th and Highway 2 in Lincoln. What are the hours folks can come visit you?
We're here 10 to 4 on Saturday. We also have a location in Omaha at 138th and Industrial Road. And our website is spasonline.com.
You going to have Kansas on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going to be watching.
Okay. Well, congrats to you guys. 13th in a row. I got to give it to you.
I saw a T-shirt. It said, "The Beakers Dozen."
The Beakers Dozen. I like that.
Well, 13.
13 and counting. There'll be many more. Deb, we'll see you soon. Thanks for the time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. There we go. I like that. She, you know what, though? She's been a KU fan since, well, for, I mean, with Roy and mm-hmm. probably Adonis Jordan. There's a name. Yeah, Adonis Jordan.
Adonis Jordan.
That's from early 90s.
When did Roy take over at KU? He was, because he came from assistant from NC,
Larry,
right?
Brown was there.
Yes, that's right.
Larry Brown won the title in 86.
With Danny Manning.
Danny and the Miracles, 87, yeah. 88. I think 89 is when Roy got there.
And he stayed until he took the job at...
He took the job at Carolina in 04. And they won it in 05. 04, 05.
Of course they did.
Well, but he was coaching under Dean for years.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Roy, Droopy Dog, recruited Jordan. Mm-hmm. He got Jordan to North Carolina.
Yeah. Well, good for him. Good for Roy.
He's the one dude that can part his hair down the middle and you don't want to punch.
Roy?
Yeah.
He parted? I never noticed. I want to watch that now.
Well, it's not blatantly awful, but...
Like the butt cut?
Well, it's not quite. You got a side crack.
Okay.
But I like Roy, but those who've had to work with him, Roy fans. I'm going to go do girls basketball.
Yeah, you get out of here.
East, Southeast. Bird, good to see you, brother.
You got
appreciate it.
Yeah.
Talk with you in about an hour then.
All right, we'll talk.
Sounds good.
Have a good call.
All right, Jay, we're about 15 minutes away here from Nebraska-Michigan State. Let's hear Miles' thoughts about the last time these two teams played.
I can prove that it was one of our worst defensive performances in my career here, and it was one of their best performances of the season. So I would like to think we will match up better, that we will play better, and we will have a better outcome, too, in terms of how we compete.
Yeah, some of those numbers. Michigan State, 56% from the floor, 65% from three, and only 50% from the free throw line. So there's one place where they didn't excel.
No, I mean,
they shot lights
out. They
were
bananas. I mean, everything they put up, I mean, if it didn't go in, it was like, you know, around, you know, rattles out. You know, they were super efficient. They were great. I mean, again, that was after that shooting performance they have, that was the whole, like, people were starting digging up, you know, all the information about Tim Miles and his horrible three-point shooting, mm-hmm. you know, defense. And again, I'm always giving, if you got to pick your poison, I think I've said on this show before, if you're going to pick your poison, I'm giving teams a three-point shot, you know, and I'm defending down low, I'm doubling the bigs, I'm doing whatever I want. I'll defend those very high percentage shots, but those low percentage shots, the three-pointer, I mean, and Michigan State hadn't been shooting the three that great all year anyway, so it was just, again, this is one of those games where we didn't play very well coming off the big win at Purdue, and they were money. They were lights out.
Yeah, you had Ed out of that game, and then Jordy was still kind of – he hadn't found his footing defensively yet like he has right now. Just doubling pick and roll, it was still kind of a mess. Here's what Miles had to say more about that game, what they learned from that game.
That we can be a soft team, and that makes me angry. And what I mean by soft is, you know, if you come out and you don't play with incredible urgency – or physicality, if you don't play tough on the ball, if you don't run your stuff with great pace, a team like Michigan State will come into your home and embarrass you. And that's something we wanted to make a bigger deal to our guys, to have a better home court advantage. And we haven't to my liking. I mean, we've lost some tough ones, a couple of real close ones, and we've won some close ones. But at the same time, you know, our road record is the same as our home record. Now, that's fine if you're winning big time at home, but you know, that's not, you know, we need to be better at home in our league.
They really do got to figure out how to be better at the
I know
ball.
That's it's just it's
after
it's,
that first year of having
I know,
one loss
and I know it like, and it was a close Michigan State Michigan loss.
Yep,
it is it's very perplexing. You're just thinking, okay, you got the best arena of the Big Ten, the best, probably the most consistent, you know, attendance,
well,
you know,
sure,
across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fans, for the most part, it's, and again, the energy sometimes up or down. It just depends if it's a Tuesday or a Thursday night. If it's those Tuesday night 8 o'clock tips are very dicey for energy. Yeah, the fans might leave early every now and then. But, yeah, it's just weird. I don't know if it's almost they get too up for it and a little too jacked. I don't know.
Too much pressure.
See, like Nebraska football had that for a few years there, where they'd play well on the road, but at home they would choke a little bit. So
before that Purdue game, which Huskers won, which you know they lost 7 out of 8, but the one they won at home, Miles tried something different and put the team in a hotel it was a road game, and that kind of maybe turned out to work for them.
Yeah, no, I mean coaches will do everything they can to flip the script. I mean they are. You want to talk about coaches being creatures of habit and routine, but I tell you what, they're the whole what's insanity, keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. I mean, coaches believe in that. You know, if they don't see any difference being made, they'll change that real quick. That's kind of a signs of, you know, being a good coach. But absolutely, they got to get that figured out. So again, at Michigan State, played there well before. I mean, we can get our predictions here coming up in the next segment. But I mean, I think they'll play well again. It was a 4-point spread against Ohio State last time because they played. Was that a Sunday or Saturday? It was a Saturday game, Saturday afternoon. So nice thing is they got a good little break, which we haven't seen that here. You know, early in the Big Ten schedule, they've had like the Thursday Sunday game. So coming back up one last time here on a Thursday, TJ Henning, Jay Moore, Hail Varsity Radio. We'll be back.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMoore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
As I look at Bridges, he is a terrific shooter. He's a terrific athlete. He can get you in transition. He can make threes. He can put it on the floor. And, you know, he almost plays like a wing, you know, like a guard. And so I can see why his ceiling's so high and why he should be in the NBA next year. But if he wanted to declare today, it'd be fine. As we look at things, you know, he's really a tough matchup. So we're going to have to figure that one out.
One last time back at you, Jay Moore. TJ Henning, Schmidt had to bounce early to get a call for some district girls basketball. About five minutes here to tip for Huskers and Sparty. That was Coach Miles just talking about Bridges and, you know, how hell of a player. And, you know, one thing, it's just how coaches have to adapt. And it's a good thing and a bad thing because a lot of times now, a lot of these kids might be skipping and just going straight from high school to NBA. Just you're getting these kids in school for 1 year, but the one and done factor that Izzo, Krzyzewski, we talked about.
I mean, they normally don't do it, but
Roy at UNC.
It worked out for Coach K that 1 year with Okafor, Tyus Jones, Justin Winslow.
This year,
maybe not so much.
But yeah, you don't see that.
I mean, Denzel Valentine, Draymond Green, you know, think guys who stay there long term for
years.
Izzo. But Izzo finally was like, I need some talent in here.
Right? Without a doubt. So it's just. I mean, he's a hell of a player. I mean, he is phenomenal.
He'll be a lottery pick.
For sure. He's fun to watch. This year my college basketball game, I've just been really into the Huskers. Like for some reason, my wife always it's like, why do you keep watching these guys? I just can't not. Like, how do you not? And you know, I was getting pissed. You know, watching the game last Saturday against Ohio State. She goes, why are you getting so mad? You know what your expectations are. Like, no, it's just you get frustrated. I don't know. I can't help it. Anytime I watch anything Nebraska related, you know, it's just. My heart gets into it, and I just like, it's just the frustration level is always there.
Well, yeah, and with how low the point spreads are, it really is like you don't know whether they're going to win this game or not. What was the stat I saw? Out of 100 Big Ten games, like 46 of them were all within 5 points or less.
This year.
Yeah, this season.
Wow.
Like, that's staggering. No,
that's bananas.
That's why the Big Ten's been so – has so much parity.
Right, yeah, the everyone just beats up on each other. Mm-hmm. No, it'll be interesting. Your thoughts, I mean, honestly, you got a score prediction for tonight, Teach?
I think it's going to be close. The Huskers, if they really want to make some noise, they need to finish 3-1 in their next four. I think this is their toughest out of their next four. I think I see them coming
even
up.
Even going to Minnesota?
Now, Minnesota's hot, and I thought about that too, but I think tonight will just be a little bit tougher than that because, you know, before this hot streak, Minnesota was pretty cold as well. Mm-hmm. So, but again, the Big Ten has just been so up and down. They're a young team as well. I like Michigan State tonight, 66-63.
Yeah, I'm not that far off with you. Again, I want them to see them to – to win out, or, you know, 3-1, get a chance to get into the NIT, you know, that having that Bills at least 500 record. You know, we need some postseason play. It'd be great to, you know, be able to go over here to PBA when it's nice outside and have a couple beers before a game at over at the Rail Yard. So, I'll go a fairly higher scoring game. I'll go Michigan State 70. We lose 68.
Okay.
Some free throws. Free throws hurt us again.
And it's the same starting five that it's been lately. Ed Morrow going to continue to come off the bench.
There we go. There you have it. So driving home, get it switched over to hear Mr. Pavelka on the call. But we'll be back tomorrow, Hail Varsity Radio. Thank you.